This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy to see if you could save when you bundle your home and auto policies. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
A healthy pregnancy starts with prenatal care. The Florida Department of Health in Miami-Dade County offers regular checkups to help protect you and your baby from complications like high blood pressure, infections, and preterm labor. Our services include physical exams, screenings, ultrasounds, and postpartum care, including family planning. Call 305-575-3800 or visit miamidade.floridahealth.gov to see if you qualify. Prioritize your health and your baby's. Start today.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
You just found the most downloaded fitness, health, and entertainment podcast. This is Mind Pump. Today's episode, we answered listeners' questions. They wrote in to Mind Pump Media on Instagram. We picked some questions and we answered them. But this was after the intro. Today's intro is 53 minutes long. In the intro, we talk about fat loss science, muscle building, exercise, nutrition, sleep. We talk about current events, family life. It's a good time. Again, if you want to post a question that we can pick, go to Instagram at Mind Pump Media. Now, this episode is brought to you by some sponsors. The first one is Organifi. Today, we talked about their Happy Drops. They have compounds in them that improve your mood. They lift your mood and your libido. That's what the studies are showing. Go check them out. Go to Organifi.com. That's Organifi.com/mindpump. Use the code mindpump, get 20% off. This episode is also brought to you by Vuori. This is athleisure wear that is amazing. It's the best athleisure wear you'll find anywhere. And if you go through our link, you'll get 20% off. Go to VuoriClothing.com. That's VuoriClothing.com/mindpump. We also have a sale on some programs this month. MAPS Split and the Anabolic Metabolism Bundle of Programs. 50% off. If you're interested, go to mapsfitnessproducts.com and then use the code July50 for the discount. Here comes the show. Working out too much can make you fat. It's true. We're going to talk about the 7 ways doing too much is making it impossible to lose body fat, or worse, you're getting fatter.
Wow.
Let's go.
Wow. Let's hear it.
I thought I'd hook everybody with a really crazy statement. No, I actually thought this would be a good topic because I was on the phone last night with our customer service department. And I was talking to Margaret, and she was talking about how there's people that write in and ask questions and how it's hard for them to understand or to even believe that doing less would result in better results. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to do this as a fit tip because people have a tough time understanding this. On its surface, it doesn't make sense. How can moving less be better for fat loss? Aren't I supposed to burn more calories? But that's not exactly what's happening. And I'll start with the first reason. And by the way, everything that's listed here is backed by independent studies, peer-reviewed research. And so one of the ways that doing too much means you're doing more than what is ideal for your body, okay? And what determines whether or not what's ideal really is determined on the person, their fitness level, their genetics, their current lifestyle. And this can change throughout your life. If you go through a stressful period of your life, then you need to do less exercise oftentimes. If your hormones are out of balance, if you're a beginner, I think you guys get the point. But one of the first ways it makes you fatter is training too much creates very strong cravings. Oh, yeah. In particular, and they've done studies on this specifically, for hyperpalatable foods. So when you're overtraining and you're sending this really loud, consistent stress signal that your body's not necessarily recovering from very well, one of the ways that your body tries to adapt to this is it tries to comfort you with hyperpalatable foods and also have you eat more calories to try to compensate from the overtraining.
The interesting part about that, now is that something related to cortisol? Is that what's going on with that? Like that's causing that?
Part of it. So there's a psychological aspect, which is just overtraining doesn't feel good. You might ignore it because
your body's naturally searching for more energy.
Comfort.
Yeah.
Well, your body's searching for comfort. Oh. And so you're going to have cravings for food that produce those good feelings. The second reason is too much stress. You know, for most of human history, one of the main sources of chronic stress was inability to get enough food. And so when your body's under a lot of stress, what can happen to some people, many people, is their hunger or their cravings skyrocket. And you see this repeatedly with workouts that are too hard.
Well, you know, what's interesting about this too, is that, all that stress under eating like that also results in poor sleep, and poor sleep also ramps up the cravings.
We're going to get to vicious cycle. I know I was trying not to skip ahead for once, but yeah, that was like, those are both like totally tied in together.
They are 100%. But yeah, I mean, this was me. When I overtrain, I just noticed that I have to use more of my willpower to say no to the foods for me that are the triggers, like potato chips and stuff like that. And I noticed with clients, when I would bring them down from overtraining to a more appropriate levels, they didn't struggle so much with eating foods that weren't, you know, maybe quote unquote good for them.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, this is why I brought up the other day, I used the baking a cake analogy, because so many people connect working out to like a job or a sport. And in those scenarios, the more you work, the more effort you
put. More hours, more money.
Yeah, but it's not. It's more like baking a cake, where it's like, yeah, more ingredients, more temperature, more time is not what makes a better cake. Mm-hmm. It's more like that than it is.
There's a perfect amount.
Yeah, and right. and anything above or below that results in less results. And the you get from that, the worse it is.
That's right. Next up, and you kind of said this a little bit, Adam, is your cortisol level becomes elevated when it shouldn't be. So the way cortisol works, cortisol is not a bad hormone. It gets labeled a bad hormone. It is the stress hormone. So it does go up when you're under a lot of stress. And what it does is it releases glycogen from the liver, and it burns more energy, right? It gives you energy. So if you were to get a spike in cortisol, you'd feel kind of wired and hyper. And it gets elevated during times of stress. But when what it's supposed to look like is it's supposed to rise in the morning when you wake up, and slowly go down throughout the day, and it's lowest in the evening so you can sleep. But when you're overtrained, when you're doing too much, the cortisol starts to look high all the time. And then if you keep pushing it, you get an inverted cortisol numbers, where it's low in the morning, where you're dragging butt, you're taking tons of caffeine to get going. And then at the end of the night, you're exhausted, but you're wired. You're wired but tired. And you can't sleep.
You're not producing melatonin like you normally would.
No.
It's kind of like that inverse relationship between the two of those. Yeah, so you kind of really screw up that whole balance to where it interrupts your sleep.
And too much cortisol all the time, or inappropriate cortisol levels, or things that are outside of what would be considered optimal, promotes visceral, in particular, visceral body fat.
Yeah.
And belly fat in particular. Women, when they're high stress all the time, what they'll start to notice is their fat, the way that they store body fat starts to change, and it starts to happen more on the midsection than it would normally happen.
This is a really difficult one for people to connect the dots to, because there's almost this positive feedback you get. We call them cortisol junkies, right? Yep. The client who undereats and overtrains, and they love the circuit.
You feel energy from it.
They get the hype. They get the hype from it.
So, I mean, I know you guys have had this. I mean, try telling somebody who, you know, does that type of training that gets this cortisol dump of energy right afterwards and goes, there's nothing you can tell me that tells me, you can tell me that is bad for me, because I always feel so good right afterwards. Yep. You know, you get this sense of accomplishment, you get this cortisol dump. And so they're getting this positive reinforcement of, this is the right thing. It feels right. And so trying to convince that client that no, this is not necessarily the right or appropriate dose for you, and what you're feeling is just the initial dump of cortisol,
right,
and that also that feeling of accomplishment, it is not a positive sign that this is the right or appropriate workout. That's really hard to convince somebody that when they're in that.
Right. And by the way, cortisol junkies tend to have other attributes to their personality that come along with this. Not always, but they tend to be late, or they tend to show up last minute. They tend to place themselves in stressful situations. They have go, go, go. Got to move. Don't want to sit still for whatever reason.
Procrastinators.
Why? Because that pumps out more cortisol and gives you more of that artificial energy.
Stress in which, there.
Again, cortisol, it breaks muscle down and it promotes fat storage. But when it's high, it gives you this kind of wired energy until it stops working. And then what happens is your cortisol then is crashed.
Yep.
This is when you get people, what we used to say, in adrenal fatigue. They don't call it that anymore, where they're just, what is wrong with me? I feel dead. I feel hyper fatigued. What this person did is they just pushed it for too long. They kept going until essentially the drugs wore out, And now they're in a position where it's like, you got to take 2 months off exercise completely. And I've had clients like this, where you got to take them way, way back just to heal their body.
Yeah.
Next up, it hammers your testosterone. Like it, this is for both men and women. Low testosterone in men and women have the same symptoms. Less muscle mass, less strength, more fat gain,
lower
less
energy.
Motivation, yeah. Less energy, lower libido. That all happens from low testosterone. The difference between men and women is, you know, men have higher amounts of testosterone than women do. But overtraining, especially in combination with under-eating, this is a fantastic way to lower your testosterone. I mean, in a man, you can overtrain him for 3 days and bring his calories way down, and you'll see a drop in testosterone
immediately.
Immediately. Right away.
Yeah.
So testosterone is this anabolic, fat-burning, muscle-building hormone, and overtraining brings it back down. Essentially, what you're doing, we talked about cortisol, now we're at testosterone, is you're creating a hormone profile that's favorable to fat gain and unfavorable to muscle gain. So you're fighting an uphill battle is what ends up happening. And the slope gets steeper and steeper the harder you keep hammering in this direction. You
stop signaling muscle building. And so now it goes to fat reserves.
That's right. Because
you're trying to survive. And really, that's the whole hook at the beginning. That's why there's truth in it. Because what are you actually signaling right now? You're signaling to store energy, to store fat.
Do you think this is more or less difficult for like men or women to feel it? Like, do you think men, because they're used to higher levels, tend to be able to see this or feel this easier than women? Like in a woman with low, that has lower testosterone levels, maybe she doesn't notice as much.
I don't know, but I will say from experience, I'd love your guys' feedback on this. It was harder for me to get women to understand that they're overtraining than men. These women, it was hard. Yeah, I don't know why. And I don't know if it's because I think maybe because they had a lot of responsibilities, kids got to do this, got to do that, stay busy. But this was women.
It's the association with movement and fat, that whole like,
maybe that's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. It's cause like when it's almost like a real simple equation, you know, most people will just identify, if I move this, I'll keep the fat off.
Right.
And that's it. It's as baseline as it gets.
Yeah. And I think it's also guys are typically more interested in muscle gain. So it's easier to convince them you're not getting stronger.
Right.
Whereas a woman's like,
well, I don't want to get bulk.
I don't want to gain weight.
I don't care. Like, I just want to get rid of my belly fat.
That's what
I
care about. But I mean, if you hammer your hormones, you guys, like, good luck building muscle and burning body fat. Here's what it feels like. It feels like I'm working out like crazy. I'm training real hard, and I have an extra 15 pounds that won't come off my body.
Yeah.
And I'm not progressing.
Yeah.
And it's like, what's going on here? And then the fear is, if I cut back, am I going to gain even more body fat?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
No, you'll get leaner.
Right.
Is what's going to happen. Next up, screws up your sleep. This is actually one of the first signs that you're doing too much, is that you have restless sleep, hard time falling asleep, or you fall asleep right away, but then you wake up throughout the night. Those are all signs that you're overtrained, you're overdoing it.
Yeah, the point I was making earlier about this is that—
And that messes everything up.
Well, all of these are connected. So it's like these are seven different ways that it can make you fat. And it's like, but if you're overtraining, you're under eating, you're getting them all. This is all probably happening. Some people worse than others, but typically all these come together, and they all, I think, make each other worse.
That's right.
So you talk about the cravings and stuff like that earlier. It's like, yeah, your cravings and the under eating and overtraining, and then you're also not getting sleep, which then promotes the low testosterone, which is also,
elevated cortisol.
It's just
brain fog, all these other
symptoms. Yeah, they just all keep feeding each other. And then the hard part is you're in it, and you're in it all the time, that it becomes your new normal.
That's right.
And so you don't think it's bad. I mean, how many people have you asked or talked to in the middle of all this, and you ask them how they feel, and they're like, I feel fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel fine.
Until you get them out of it.
Until they get out of it, and then they go, normal. Oh, shit. I didn't know I was supposed to feel this good. It's like, hey, you just got, I mean, that just shows you how resilient we are as humans, this ability to adapt to all these things and survive still. And
keep going.
And keep going. And then you just sooner or later go like, oh, okay, this is normal. So you don't know what good feels
like. Yeah, oftentimes the people in the situation didn't come seek me out until the signs were so loud that they were afraid.
Yeah.
Why is my hair falling out? Why am I breaking out? Why is my energy just in the floor all day long? Like, what's wrong with me? And it's all this stuff. It also can cause muscle loss, for sure. Overtraining is a great way to get your body to pare muscle down. And this is because your hormones are leveraging a way to do so. And you're just beating the crap out of yourself. So you go to the gym, and at best, nothing progresses. At worst, Why am I feeling weaker? Why am I feeling more fatigued? I used to be able to lift this much. Now I can only lift this much. What's happening with my body? And by the way, that muscle loss in combination with everything else we're saying is a great way to slow your metabolism down.
Yeah.
It's a great way to make it easier to get to gain more body fat. And I had, listen, I can tell you countless stories of women that I trained or that trainers that work for me trained where they were eating 1,200 calories a day and working out a lot, a lot, and still had body fat to lose and couldn't figure out what was going on.
Yeah.
And you ask yourself, how's that possible? The body will adapt remarkably well to doing something like that. And it's a scary place to be because the advice is work out less and eat more, which to the person sounds like, oh, you want me to eat more and work out less? I'm just going to balloon up.
Strength is a good measure for this as well. Like if you're working out and you've just been in this plateau almost for, I mean, some people I've trained have been in a plateau for like a year. It's like, and they don't realize that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's a problem. You know, it's just like they're on this continual sort of
hamster wheel.
Yeah. Hamster wheel. And when, if you're not getting stronger, if you're not promoting strength in any direction, like that's a big problem you should address.
I actually think that that's probably more common than not because they normally don't come to you until they've been spinning their wheels
for a while,
or unless they have like a major health issue that pops up or something like you said, like hair loss or something crazy. Most people, it's just they've been in this massive plateau for a year and they've seen themselves either stabilize or go down in strength. And then finally they're just like, okay, I've tried all the things. And normally trying all the things is adding more stuff to all the stuff they were doing and it's not getting them the results. And then so finally, okay, let me hire a professional. At that point, you got to reverse all that out.
That's right. Next up is it destroys your gut health. This is a fact.
Now is that just due to the inflammation?
Inflammation.
And the gut lining
big part of it. Yeah. Because when you're chronically inflamed, even if it doesn't feel like lots of pain, your gut, if you get gut inflammation, the tight junctions in your gut open,
leads to those.
You get leaky gut syndrome. Yep. You start to have food intolerances. It can slow down gastric emptying. So what does that mean? Potential for things like SIBO. So oftentimes people who do this also start to notice gut issues like bloat after eating certain meals. I can't eat the same foods I used to. You know, gas, constipation, it can definitely look like that. And there's lots of studies on this, by the way, like hard training athletes who are always, they're always balancing on the line of doing too much and doing enough, right? Because athletes aren't just about getting stronger and faster. They also have to practice their skill as often as possible. So in many cases, they're training like right on that line. You look at the data on gut health issues with athletes and it's astronomical.
Yep.
Because they're constantly pushing and training their bodies. And these are athletes who are well-trained. We're not even talking about the average person who's overtraining, which is even much more difficult. And then finally, in my experience, working out a lot can oftentimes promote disordered eating. Now, what does it look like? Well, it looks like this. Like I just beat the crap out of myself in the gym. I can barely move. I'm going to eat that burrito or I'm going to eat that whatever because I deserve it or because I burned those calories off. Not realizing that you didn't burn that many calories.
Yeah.
You really didn't burn a lot of calories, especially if you've been doing it for a long time.
Your body gets more efficient
each
time you attempt it.
Absolutely. But this can definitely promote that like restrict, and then binge.
Yeah.
Type of, or on the flip, I binged. Now I'm going to go beat myself up even harder
which is
in the gym.
A worse spot.
Yeah, I think the most common thing I see in this area is the restrict for such a long period of time. And even like the binge, it doesn't look like a binge. In other words, like you have somebody who's like, and this is part of the reason why they just can't figure this out, is like, man, Adam, I eat like dialed, and dialed to them is like 1,200 calories, super low calorie per, and they do that for long periods of time. And then they finally have like a weekend where they're like, fuck it, I'm just going to enjoy myself. And it's not like crazy, but it's like enough to put on a substantial amount of body fat on them because they're so used to being so low. And so that's just part of the, like, this doesn't make sense. Like I don't eat fast food. I don't do, they always list off all the things they don't do, but yet I keep putting on this body fat and it's because they go these long periods of so low of calorie and then they overindulge a little bit. And 600 calories over when you only eat 1200 calories is 50% of your intake. Yeah. And so you're that 600 calories affects that person differently than somebody who has a roaring metabolism or a healthy metabolism that they consume, say their maintenance is 2,600 calories or 2,800 calories a day.
600 calories, nothing.
Nothing. That person doesn't really feel that effect at all. But the person who doesn't, eat that way, and then all of a sudden have one day has 600 calories over, which easily can sneak into someone's diet, and now all of a sudden they feel like they put on all this body fat.
Yeah, yeah. When when I would when I had clients who got in a really good place metabolically, fast metabolism, strong, they'd go on vacation and they'd come back and they'd be so shocked that they didn't gain all this body fat. When I used to go on vacation, I would gain weight.
Yeah.
What's happening now? It's like, it's totally different. Your body is not the same. Your metabolism is much faster.
All that rest recovery.
Insulin sensitivity is better. Like you were totally fine versus what they might've experienced before, where they take a little bit of time off and go eat. And it's like, oh my God, what happened? I'm holding all this water. I'm holding all this bloat. All right. I have been reading studies. So Organifi's Happy Drops, very popular, because they lift your mood. So one of the active ingredients, saffron, it increases circulating levels of dopamine and serotonin in the brain. There's studies show this, so it makes you happier. You know what else it does that I found studies on?
What?
Makes you horny. I'm gonna read you guys some studies on libido and saffron.
Now, is that actually happening, or is that more of a correlation of you're just, because you're in a better mood, you're also, because that's me, that's how I work. Like, if I'm in a good mood, I'm more likely to want to have sex. If I'm not in a good mood,
It's direct. So here's, I'll read some studies for you. There's a 2022 randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trial found that women 18 to 55 with severe sexual dysfunction, they took just 15 milligrams of saffron twice daily, so 30 milligrams. They showed significant improvements in female sexual function index scores.
Wow.
Particularly in arousal, lubrication, and satisfaction compared to placebo. Another study showed that women taking 30 milligrams of saffron daily for 4 weeks had increased sexual desire, lubrication compared to the placebo group. A 2024 trial.
Interesting.
Showed increase in libido, arousal, orgasm, and satisfaction in women with sexual dysfunction. In men, they took 20 men with erectile dysfunction for 10 days, and they had, I like how these studies crack me up, by the way.
Yeah.
I'll just read you the study. Improvements in erectile dysfunction, including tip and base rigidity and tumescence. How did I test that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's rigid.
Just
bro.
In the tip, though. Yeah. Not the base.
How did they test that like a machine? Took 4 pounds to bend it in half this time. Right. 2018 review of six studies indicate that saffron significantly improved libido and overall sexual satisfaction.
Wow.
In men. Yes.
Wow. And just like that.
Particularly, by the way,
sold out.
Particularly,
can we just hand these out?
Here's what's interesting. Particularly in those with antidepressant induced erectile dysfunction. So sometimes when people will go on a prescription antidepressant, they'll have issues with sexual function.
Yeah.
So
that's a common side effect of like SSRIs, right?
That's inability to orgasm, that kind of stuff.
Wow.
Wild, right? That so happy wild. Drops.
You said 15
more benefits.
15 to 30 milligrams a day. How many of those do you have
30
to,
milligrams?
How many does Justin have to eat in order to get
I have four. So
I think there's 15 per two or per one?
For two gummies, there's 30 milligrams.
There you go.
Oh, for two is 30.
Yeah, so one is 15.
Damn, Justin.
Yeah.
60. That's what 60 does.
Hey, he just ate six of them.
Keep your distance, all right? Wow, that's all I got
to
say.
That has got to be one of their fastest selling products.
It is. And it just reselling. I'm sure after that commercial you just did, it's sold out for sure within.
I mean, listen.
Better get on there.
Don't believe me. Look it up, everybody. Yeah. And by the way, saffron.
It's science, you guys.
I got to tell you guys this also. Mm. I was looking it up because you know the supplement space. It's garbage. It's like full of lies. Lots and lots and lots of lies. In terms of a company selling, it has this ingredient. Actually, it doesn't. You know what a lot of companies are doing?
Huh.
So saffron's blowing up. There's a particular extract of it.
Oh, God. So there's
Organifi uses one called Cefractive. This is the one that you'll see in a lot of studies. It is standardized. It's got the active ingredients.
Is it herb? Pure.
It is. It's used
flour.
It's
a flour.
It's a flour, yeah.
It's part of the flour.
Yeah. So it's been used in medicine for a long time, in natural medicine. But anyway, what companies are doing is they're not using saffron. They're using a little bit of saffron, and then they're watering it down with like turmeric, which is good for you, but ain't going to give you what saffron does.
Yeah,
because it's the same color. So the capsules will look orange or whatever, and they're faking it.
Of course.
Yeah, and there's no quality control.
Always the snake.
You know, because it's a flower. Can you make a tea out of it then?
It's used in cooking a lot, like Persian cooking and things like that.
Yeah.
So, you could probably make a saffron tea for sure.
Yeah. I mean, my sister-in-law, they're all big on like taking like real, like the real flower. They have one of those, I don't know.
Oh, do they actually get like dandelions?
Yeah. And they put them in they have one of those little tea brewing things. Yeah. Have you ever seen them before? They're like a little metal thing, and then you put the real flour.
That's the way to do it.
I know, it's cool. And then they have a little candle thing that heats under. They're all into it. Like they're
I was
like
wondering about that because my grandma always used to put like dandelions in salad, and I was like, oh, why am I eating flowers?
Like, oh, really? It's
just weird. Yeah. I'm like, why don't you just go like grab it outside and just put it on top? Like, I'm not an animal.
That's how we cured every illness that our dog had when I was a kid.
She was onto something.
My dad would have him eat grass.
that is a good remedy. And okay, so
he's okay. Let
it
be grass.
Now, what that is, it makes him throw up.
I guess.
No, it does. It totally does. Yeah. And there's something in grass
that makes their stomach somehow.
Yeah, I don't know. It gets out whatever. So if they got something that,
of all things dogs eat, it's grass that makes them puke. I've seen dogs eat all kinds of horrible shit.
Well, they'll do it intentionally themselves. Yeah, you'll see it when a dog has got an upset stomach or whatever, that they'll intentionally eat the grass and throw
it's
it
so
out.
So happy there's something for in the my grass dogs that they don't even throw up anymore. They just eat it.
They just
mow your lawn. They just turn into cows.
Yeah, so saffron, a spice derived from the Crocus sativus flower, commonly known as saffron crocus. Again, Crocus Happy Drops uses the extract from a company that this is where they get the studies from, is they use like standardized.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Count on Drew.
It's the world's most expensive spice.
It is.
Uh-huh. It is.
How much does it cost per whatever?
Per ounce or per gram?
Interesting. Now, is that because of how beneficial it is?
Well, it's so rare. It's very hard to get. So, you know, it's the stigma from the flower, the little thing it pokes up from inside the flower.
Oh, so it takes a lot.
Oh,
wow.
Oh, I didn't know that was the most expensive.
Yeah.
That's wild. Hey, speaking of tea.
The base.
Here's a sci-fi nerd thing for you. Isn't it always spice is what in the sci-fi movies?
That's in Dune.
That's just in Dune.
Oh, I thought the other ones have. Spice. Yeah. Is that what you think it is? You think it's saffron?
No. It's in the desert.
It's like crystal meth or something.
Yeah, crazy. Dude.
Do they grow it out there? Is that where they, I can't remember. Where, I don't remember.
Do they grow what?
The spice. In I don't remember. Dune?
It's.
I do think they show it?
They mine for it.
Yeah. I know they talk about it, but I don't remember recalling the movie ever seeing it.
Oh, yeah. What does it say? What's the price there, Doug?
So 1 gram, it looks like around $15.
Wow.
1 gram.
That is expensive.
Yeah. What about a truffle? I mean, does that count as
how much
a spice?
Is a gram? That's not a spice. Okay. That's a mushroom.
Why you look over me like
how
that?
How much is a gram of weed? Just trying to compare.
Well, 3.5 grams is what you would sell an eighth. That's what it is. So you're talking about like $50, $40. Well, now it's down to like $30 these days.
Wow, so it's more expensive than weed.
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy. Wow,
we should get in the business. Yeah.
All right, listen. You brought up tea using your own metal.
Yeah, yeah.
You know why everybody should do that?
Why?
You know what a high source of microplastics tea bags are?
Oh, God. Really?
The tea bags? Yes.
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 Really?
A lot.
Are we just finding
that? Well, I imagine you're dumping hot water on it.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right. Well, so buy loose leaves.
And I got to think in the herbal tea world, because that's very hippie-esque, that there would be like tea bags that they've made that are like that's got to be a thing, right?
Dude, are we slowly turning into
there's got to be figures? Like some made out of hemp or something that is way healthier and better for you. There's no way.
I'm sure there's something.
Everybody's making tea bags out of these microplastics and we just
there are bags that are made out of a paper.
There's got to be.
But then most bags now are made out of like plastic, like little fine fibers, you know, because consumers like them better.
Why wouldn't we use like hemp for something like that?
I don't know.
Let's look it up.
I mean, you can get cotton tea bags.
There you go.
Yeah.
So there's other ways to do it. Obviously, but the steel ball, but
the normal like Lipton one, right? So
that's probably plastic.
Wow. Oh yeah.
Such bullshit.
I know. You'd probably drink the most tea, huh?
Oh, man, we've been.
I don't drink a lot of tea. Actually,
I have tea every other night.
What kind of tea?
I like the chamomile.
Oh yeah, that's the best. Yeah, like is that because I taught you that, or did you drink it before?
We've always had that. Okay. Katrina's a big tea drinker. Her whole family are like we have one of the, like I said, the little candle. We have all that stuff.
Yeah. I have,
but I know. I honestly just throw the bag in there. But I mean, I had no idea.
It's full of plastic.
Yeah,
I have in-laws that are English.
I can't wait.
The English are crazy about tea.
Yeah, right? That's everything is around.
When tea. They come visit, she brings her own tea. She actually flies and brings it to my house. Yeah. I'm like, what, you brought your own tea?
She's
like,
I mean, Katrina's, my sister-in-law is like that. She shows up and she comes with her tea. You know what I'm saying?
I got more bad news for you, Adam. Something you love doing. Did you know that scented candles are some of the worst offenders?
I'm bring on the cancer. Bro, I'm bring on the cancer. I don't even care.
Oh, yeah, come on. Don't joke like that.
I mean, dude, isn't there?
It's just like, no way I'm getting rid of that.
Options that are like these fat and...
there are, and I'll get to that. Okay. But scented candles
I was talking to Courtney
often contain phthalates, which are xenoestrogens, which bind your estrogen receptors. You know how you say you get sensitive nipples?
Yep.
It might be from this. Then there's also, there's also volatile organic compounds, semi-volatile organic compounds, and particulate matter. Did you know some scented candles produce as much particulate matter as exhaust?
What?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, bro. So you're smelling what you're smelling in. It's just bad, bro. It is
just,
not
just lovely toxic
it
fumes.
Is not good. All right. So there's some good options for you, bro.
Yeah, but how much does it level up a night of sex, though? It's like, and you have to ask yourself, like, is that worth it?
I thought you did it by yourself and then had like
that too, whatever, all the time.
Okay. So yeah. I've replaced all my candles with actual beeswax candles.
There you go.
Unscented. They smell great.
That's it.
Unscented smells
beeswax.
Great.
Yeah, it smells like beeswax. It has its own smell.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, really I told good. You that the listener who sent me some like vanilla smelling one that I don't have to burn. Just sitting in the room puts off this incredible smell.
It just now throws off chemicals.
Yeah.
No, it's probably scented oil.
Yeah.
So you can use scented oils.
Yeah.
Not scented oils, but there's like organic oils.
Yeah, essential oils. We use essential oils.
That'll do it. You can also get beeswax. The problem with beeswax is it burns fast. And they're expensive.
And they're bright, though. They're great.
Oh, they're more bright.
Yeah.
We used to burn candles all the time.
Do you use candles at your house a lot?
A lot.
You are a big candle guy, too. See?
Yeah, you know.
Act out. Just let me take all the heat, but you don't ever step in and say,
no, like, I don't get scented candles. I've gotten rid of those years ago.
But you do the bathtub and candle thing, too.
I don't do bathtubs.
I get used to organic smells.
I don't do bathtubs, but I love candles. Hey. Actually, almost every dinner, if I have somebody over. I will have candles.
Yeah. I thought you were doing it by
yourself. No, I don't do that by myself. Right now.
Him with his
with a violin playing in the background.
Lighting a candle by himself. You know, Dylan, you know what this is? What's happening here? This is when Doug and Adam are on the phone late at night with each other.
That's right.
With their scented candles.
Here comes the jealousy.
And they're talking about
jealous.
Not really.
Jealous because no one calls him.
No, Justin and I are sending each other memes.
Yeah, we're sending memes.
Yeah, like
weird shit.
Horrible memes.
What are you talking about? Justin does not answer his phone once he leaves here.
Yeah, that's true.
Once Justin leaves here, his phone's on.
Him and I both.
I'm driving. Yeah, I was like, he can't be driving fucking 9 hours. Sorry, I'm driving. I'm like, this guy is not driving.
Hey, why do you always say you're driving?
Yeah,
it does.
He does. He puts that.
Hey, don't expose my hack.
Yeah, I should. Okay. It took me a while to figure it out because I feel like I go text him.
Adam just texted me. I'm like,
he's like, I'm driving
outside.
And then I go, no, I do it again.
He literally texts you back. I'm driving right now.
It's not even the automated one. The spelling errors. I'm like, wait a second. iPhone doesn't misspell that.
I'm telling you, it's brilliant. You
guys,
I'm on to your bullshit.
Hey, speaking of cancers, did you guys know what the most common cancer in young men is? I just said we have to talk about this because we got young men that listen.
In young men. So it's not prostate
between
cancer.
Between age, I think it's 18 to 35 or something like that. What's the most common cancer?
Colon?
Nope.
Skin cancer?
Nope. Testicular cancer.
Testicular still is. I would guess prostate would have been like for
no. Testicular cancer is a young man cancer typically. Doesn't mean you can't get it when you get older.
So what's so different about that and like prostate cancer and why
one's on your balls?
No, I know that, but I mean like you would think they're closely related as far as how you would get them and why.
No, not at all. Huh. But testicular cancer. So what I did is I looked up because here's the thing about testicular cancer: very curable. Usually because people often notice it right away and it gets treated.
We gotta get rid of one of them.
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes most you gotta lose time, it. Right? You gotta lose a tezzy. And then the other one picks up the work
brutal.
Of the one that you lost. But
what from though?
What is it from?
Yeah, like how do you like fondling them too much? Like what do you get it from? No, I feel like all the moms are saying that to their boys. You keep playing with that much, and you might get testicular cancer.
Oh my god!
New way to
remember like the Harry Potter, like the Harry Palm thing that everyone
sees. Pants.
You give yourself testicular cancer. You keep playing with balls.
I don't know how you do it, Adam. But I just don't fondle my balls. Yeah. All right, sorry, Doug. This went too far. Anyway, speaking of which,
you brought it up.
I said we got to educate people. So self checks are very important. So what you do essentially is you once a month you're supposed to check your testicles, and you're looking for consistency, symmetry.
Spectacles, testicles.
Yeah, and you don't want you what you're looking for are lumps or hard nodules.
Ooh.
Is what you're looking for. Now there are natural things in the testicles like the epididymitis. I think I'm not saying that right. The spermatic cord. These are naturally on there, but you're looking for hard lumps, swelling, asymmetries. And so when men do this, the risk is super low because once you catch it, it gets treated very easily. Yeah.
Now, what are you reading to come across something like that? How does this come up?
I was trying to think of things to talk about on podcast. So I looked it up.
I got an idea.
Well, I mean, every physical, that was like part of the protocol, right? And until they started to like suggest, hey, you can do this and check it yourself. I told you my story about that.
Justin
that
was just
I got an offer. I remember I shared
my I was just already ready. I'm like, pants off.
A lot of creeps out there back then.
Yeah.
It wasn't even a doctor.
Came in.
It was a doctor, dude.
This is some guy.
It's a front desk kid.
Do you have experience?
It was a lady and she's a doctor. Okay?
I thought I had.
Scared her.
I told you, I thought I had an issue because I was at this point, I had somebody in my family just.
Think you have an issue?
Well, listen, I was traumatized. Somebody in my family was young. They got cancer and they died. And I was hyper vigilant for a little while. And I was taking a shower one day and I thought, uh oh, what is this? So I was so scared that I went to the doctor, had them examine me. They're like, no, you're fine. I said, no, I want an ultrasound. I did the whole thing.
Oh my God.
They're like, you're fine, bro. I'm like, okay, dude. Yeah. But I was a little hypochondriac.
Like your normal guy. Just some of them look weird. That's all.
Speaking of awkward, how awkward was that? God, I'm not a fan. I know you aren't either. When we have to do these like shoots and commercials.
Oh, yeah.
you guys actually went to Viore the other day.
Yeah, to do the shoot. I was explaining that to them when we do that. A couple, when we were in Viore, a couple people that worked there were fans of the show. So they were all excited for us to come in there and do that. And I was telling them just like how much we just don't like to do that. And they're like, really? Why? And I'm just like, I feel like everything that we do is authentic. I mean, it's just, we just come on here, we have conversation, we don't edit anything. It is what it is, right? It's the most authentic thing we do.
Like, okay, you're going to walk into the store.
I would never.
And that's why everybody roasts us on it all the time. Because
I get it. I get it. And it's.
And I love their products. Yes. Love them. We've been with them for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. No, very valuable to the brand. They do a good. I will say this, though.
Viore drip head to toe today.
Is that Viore?
Yeah.
The white one?
This is my favorite shirt they make. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
What is it called?
I don't know.
We know what it is.
Is that great sales pitch there?
Thank you.
Doug, find out what that is, please. Is that the Meta shirt?
No. That's something else.
That one looks good.
Dude, it's perfect.
It's softer than
because it's got a thicker material, too.
I got one, too.
Yeah.
I got a brown one.
Yeah.
I have a brown one.
I don't think I have one.
It's my favorite one they've made.
So it's like the t-shirts, but it's a little softer.
I can tell.
It's a little softer and thicker.
But thicker. But stretchy looking.
Then the Stratotech was the one I was wearing before. I remember that one. But
That's right.
Yeah.
That's what it was called.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it's a little softer than the traditional Stratotech.
Yeah.
Which is way nice. But yeah, we're in there and they're like, you know, all right, I'm going to film you walking in. Okay, now walk in again. Now I'm going to film you from this angle walking. How many times am I walking?
Yeah.
And you're filming me. And then I forget how to walk. When someone's recording me and I'm supposed to be walking in, I'm like, am I walking weird? Like, I never think of this.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Don't look like you're concentrating too much.
Yeah, dude. At one point, I walked in with one hand in my pocket. I'm like, I never walk like that.
I forget how to, like, open doors when I'm doing stuff.
What do I do
with
my hands?
And then we had to pretend like we were shopping for our wives.
Which you probably never have done.
Actually, I do. I do all the time. I don't shop for her.
Yeah.
But if I'm at the store, I'll typically, like, surprise her.
I'd like to see you pick up some leggings and just be like,
Yeah. Well,
while he was recording, I was over there talking shit. I'm like, this guy has never done this before. He has no idea what he's doing right now.
I do. I know my wife's size and everything.
Do you really?
I do.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. You know your wife said that's like should be a good like trivia.
Just in like workout apparel though. Don't ask me like anything else. But like I know the bottoms for her. I know what the tops are.
Yeah,
all that stuff.
That's good.
But yeah.
Hey, speaking of relationships, I had something I was going to ask you guys.
What
started a conversation here? What is something that a past relationship has taught you about yourself?
Huh? I don't know. You go first.
No. You can't think of something in a past relationship.
On the spot?
I mean, were you that good? Were you that good of a guy that you just didn't, like, no. you didn't have any, well, of course. So it's like, is it just hard?
I got to narrow it down. The ones I want to share. Give me some time, dude. I can't just blurt some shit, some stuff out.
What about you, Justin?
Not to be.
I'm going
to
get you too, Doug.
So people pleaser.
Huh?
Not to appease and please all the time.
Oh,
that was a mistake I made with a lot of my previous relationships.
So what would you do? Like, what would be like an example of like you, like
I'd
you
accommodate were, like all the things, like go to all the events and all the things that
you. But deep down inside, you
didn't want to be there. And wouldn't communicate it.
You're at the Britney Spears concert.
Yeah, just my shirt over my head. Yeah. You know,
this sucks.
Yeah.
Now, would that lead to? Would it lead to later like resentment and fights later on, or just more Justin suppressing stuff?
Yeah, more suppressing thing. And more like, yeah, I just didn't feel like I was ever. I don't know if it was like resentment necessarily. It was more just like I didn't feel like as big of a part of the relationship. Like I was just like doing whatever to appease them. And I don't know. It just. It gets to a point where you just don't you don't communicate anything you need at that point. It just becomes like the please this person show.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, okay, so what is it like when it comes up now, can you recall like how what you, the conversation you have to have with yourself that to work through it or help? Like, do you like okay, here's one of those situations.
It's like I don't want a desired outcome thing. It's for me now is more like is this like a point of contention that like is a pattern or something that I need to address? Like, I really don't like doing this, you know, I need to express that and like stop that. Or is this something that like, you know, I kind of balance it a lot now.
God, you and Doug are so similar in so many ways.
We are.
Yeah. That is that's a thing that you have too.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say boundaries, setting boundaries in the relationship, because like Justin, it's trying to keep the peace, you know, keep the peace, but. Yeah. The boundary wasn't there, and you get walked on, actually.
Yeah. Well, I'm very vocal about it now. I don't put up with shit.
Your other extreme.
Yeah, I went over there.
No, I'm doing
completely the other end of that. Yeah, I think because, I just realized that it was pointless for me because I didn't feel like it was a team. It wasn't like an equal relationship. Mm. It was very like pedestal kind of thing.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
There you go.
I don't, what's one for me? I don't like to share struggles or ask for help.
Yeah, that's which is why this is so difficult right now for you.
It's like, so we'll stop. No, I don't like it. It feels very uncomfortable. If I'm useful, I feel like I can be loved. If I'm not useful, why would anybody like me? Right. So this is like the challenge. So not being useful is like when you're useful to me, well, now I feel like I'm a burden.
Yeah.
So I just don't share.
So what did that look like in past relationships? And then when it manifests today, like how do you?
Well, I'll tell you, it's when I was in my previous marriage, when I got divorced, most people in my family were shocked because they didn't know the struggles and challenges.
Because you didn't share.
Never told anybody. Mm. So they just had no idea. And it was, you know, it was 10 years of struggle and challenge. So what does that look like now? Oh, now I, prayer helped a lot with that because it's impossible not to be honest and vulnerable when you're talking to the guy that knows everything. So, so that helped a lot. And then I think I share more now than I did before.
Yeah. I think I think I've seen that in just the 10 years we've been together. I think I've seen you
evolve.
Open up and share those things that I didn't feel like you ever did when we first started. So that's pretty good.
What's yours? Did you have one?
I have a lot. Yeah, I've got all kinds of, I'm a mess. Mine's attached to, we've talked about this before, about insecurity of being successful, being smart, being all the things. And so I used to attract a lot of girls that I was like the daddy, the teacher in the relationship.
And then you feel secure.
Yeah. And what's so hard about that is that it feels good. Right. So I would date these girls and, you know, I have the answer. I got it, you know, and I liked that. And it made me feel important, made me feel smart, made me feel that way. And then what would always end up happening is after months or even a year of dating that person, you realize how exhausting that is and how you're like, is this really the type of partnership that I want to be in? Like, so it took a long time to realize how attracted I was to that thing that fed my insecurity. You know, and like, and to break that, because again, it always initially makes me feel good. Mm-hmm. And so learning that that's not what I want in a partnership. And so, a couple relationships before Katrina, two relationships before her, I had pieces together. So I was about 27 when I finally figured out, cause I could look back and even though all the women that I dated were all very different, they all had that thing in common. They had that, like, I was the teacher, I was the daddy in the relationship, and I thought I liked that. And then when I realized, like, no, it was really difficult to go the other direction. It was actually, initially, those girls that I would try dating, it was like, I didn't have a natural pull to them. I'm like, I need to try this. I need to try dating a woman that I feel I can learn from, or that we can build together and do that. And so it was an uncomfortable, awkward. Now, by the time I got to Katrina, I had started to piece that together. And then obviously I see what happens when I find the right partnership that's not like that. Now the challenge, when I get the right partner like her, who is an incredible teammate that I can learn from, is then the old still wanting to be right and be daddy and be those things. And it's like, you know, I know this is what I want and what I need for myself. So every once in a while, when it rears its head that I feel I need that, it's like the check myself in those moments. But I think it's so interesting how these two have such similar.
I know.
Yeah.
So that's like an example of like one serious girlfriend. Like there was a lot of different like instances where I acted differently. It was weird. Yeah. So I wasn't always like, it was somebody that was like, I felt was outside my league. Like that with.
Okay.
And then it was like,
so you kind of felt like you needed to do all that.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was just like the self-confidence I had, but it was like when in that situation, I felt like less than. So therefore I was like trying to appease them, you know, and like do all this extra stuff. And then I was like, what the fuck am I doing? You know? And then
did you break up with her?
No. Well, yes. And then she went back to her like a total bitch. And then she broke up with me.
So she won.
Yes. She won. I let her win, dude. Fuck. Why'd you bring that up, Nashka? I don't care, dude. I don't care. I'm winning.
That's so great.
That's hilarious.
I looked up controversial parenting topics, Adam, per your suggestion.
Oh, yeah.
And I have two of them that I think are probably good discussions.
Yeah, yeah.
One of them is for parental leave for fathers. So mothers get parental leave. Is this a good thing for fathers to do, to take a month off to be with their newborn?
Well, I think the way you're wording it, how can you say, no, it wouldn't be good? Do I think it's necessary, or do I think we should do it? No.
You don't think it's necessary?
Yeah, no, I don't think it's. So I think that, I mean, this is the one beautiful thing about a partnership and a relationship. I think we provide different things. Yeah. I think in the early stages, the baby is so attached to the mother and the nurturing part that, you know, that I'm going to go out there and hunt. And is when I get home, I'm definitely going to do all the things still, as I was with Max. But I don't think that's something that we necessarily. Now, you worded it though. Would it be good? Like, sure, it could be good. I could see it would be good, especially if you're in a position where you could financially do that and do. And we kind of were when we had Max, and so I did have the flexibility. You guys let me cut out of here early and do all those things. But I definitely don't think that should be a government funded thing that we decide that we're going to like all pay taxes towards so that guys can also take fucking 6 months off. Like, yeah. No, bro, go hunt.
Yeah. I don't know. That's so I agree.
My controversial take.
I agree. But I disagree for different reasons.
Okay,
so I agree that it's not like a necessary, I think it's very important for mom to be there with baby, you know, for the first few months. The data on this is very clear. Mm-hmm. I think it's obvious too. I don't think I need to make the argument. The baby's connected to mom literally, and then when the baby's born, connected very closely. I think though it's important for fathers, not for the same reasons. I think it's important for fathers to care for mom. So mom's there for baby. Mom needs husband to care for her.
That's an interesting point.
And the data on a mother's health.
Do they parse out the like having grandma there?
I was just gonna say. Okay. It, historically, how it's worked in societies forever was that grandma, sister was with her for a little while for that beginning stage. And the data on the health of a mother and how well she's able to, be a mom to her children is crazy. And these days, unfortunately, a lot of that falls on the, fortunately or unfortunately, a lot of that falls on the husband because we don't live in communities like we used to. So many people are like, you know, where's mom? Where's mother-in-law? Everybody lives far away. So
totally agree with that. And that the point where I didn't even think of it from that perspective and for that reason. That being said though, that's a cultural problem that we have that I think totally. The solution isn't give dads this time off so they could do that. It would be more like express what you just said and get back to why it is so important that we have
family. I think the cultural point is a big one, because what we've done is we've put culturally, we value the pursuit of career so high that we've actually put it above things that are more important. And so it's like a note. Now people don't even consider how important that is.
Yeah.
That you have that kind of support when you have a baby.
But I mean, I think that's part of what dad is off is hunting. You know, if we take it back all the way, I mean, that's what, so that's what you're, why you still keep doing that. Right. Cause that's also in a sense, providing for mom. Like that's,
that's number one. We don't got lights on.
Exactly.
Go get a job.
So that's what I mean. Yeah. It's like, so most people do not have that. Most men aren't going to have that luxury to where they could take that off. And then the only way to give that luxury to all men would be to governmentally fund that. You know, and that I don't agree
so
with.
So it's a great discussion. I'm glad we're going here. So I don't know if couples, I don't know. I'm going to make a judgment. I could be totally wrong. But I don't think couples consider this and plan for it like the way I'm saying it. For example, we're going to have a baby. Let's save enough money so that I don't work for 30 days and I can be with you to support you. And I don't know if, I think what men think of, I need to get a job and have money to support you, but do they think I need to have enough to support you so I don't work for the first 30 days? Since my mom, your mom, sisters, nobody's around, I need to be here, you know, with you type of deal. But I don't know. I think we've put it in like this, we categorize it so strangely now, which is like, yeah, you're home for a week and then you go back to work and nobody's here to help mom.
What the statistics are on people that just live paycheck to paycheck versus people that actually save money.
They have statistics on that.
It's so high.
They have statistics on that.
So, I mean, to have, I don't know. That's
you would never happen.
Yeah,
Happen. So that's right. So all valid points you're making.
Yeah.
But that would require the relationship that we as a culture that we have with money and that's not happening. So you know how if like let's say everybody listening agrees like
shift.
Men should do that for all those reasons. Okay, well how do we do it? Oh, let's put something in place. We wouldn't solve it the way we should, which is like, hey man, we should probably consider. Before we have this kid, I'm gonna squirrel away, you know, a few $100 every single week or month until we do have a kid, so that I can afford to take off the time.
And here's why I'll back you up 100%. If it's not a cultural, societal thing and understanding, and we do make it so that men don't work for 30 days, there's a lot of guys that'll just do nothing.
Totally.
Yeah. It's like, oh, cool, I'm off. Yeah, I'm here. You know, but they're not. The culture isn't like, no, you need to care for mom,
right?
So she can care for baby,
right?
You need to make her feel safe and secure and healthy and feed her, because that's a tough period for if you don't have kids and you're about to have a child, like mom goes through.
Oh yeah.
Very
war.
Difficult.
That's war.
It's very difficult.
That's like everyday war, no sleep all day long.
Feeding,
like,
baby stuck to you.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So you bring such a good point up. Yeah. Problem is that the solution to me is not, like companies now
it needs to be heart change.
Yeah, because like, I would not agree as a company that we would pay taxes. You bet your ass. That's the angle I'm going to come from.
Our employees.
You are not getting that.
No. Save your money.
Save your own money.
No.
I think
that's a heart change thing. I agree with you.
Yeah. Good point. Interesting. That's controversial.
Very, very controversial. Absolutely. You have culture. There are cultures that this is a big deal. Yeah. Most of these cultures are homogenous, meaning like you go to some countries,
it's the culture, blended.
Everybody's the same. Everybody has the same beliefs. Everybody has the same ideas. This is part of their culture. And if you're a man and you go to work, you know, 2 weeks after you have a baby, your coworkers
and all their families usually in like close proximity because they value that aspect of it. And it's already assumed within the family dynamic and the structure that like, you know, the elders are going to come in, they're going to help out and all this will work. And I mean, there's definite power in that and it helps and benefit the kids' development. That's so, you know, there's something there. It's just, we don't have that established culturally here.
I heard a woman, I thought this was the best litmus test. She said, the way we should judge ideas in society or government even is, let's judge them by how they affect the most vulnerable of us, which are babies and children. Mm. So anytime somebody says, here's this idea that I have, how does it affect babies and children?
Interesting.
And the specific topic that she was talking about, but I love this litmus test for anything, was polyamory. Polyamory a good thing? She's like, how would it affect the children of these relationships? That's how we should judge whether or not. Not whether or not you think it's a good idea for right. you, but how would it affect the most vulnerable, which are...
I love that.
I think that's a great litmus test for anything.
Well, a great lens to look through that's as right. far as making the decisions. Like, I mean, that is similar to what I've said. One of the neatest things about having my son was it just changed the lens at which I looked through everything that I made a decision for. So when I didn't have him, the decision to work the extra hour or to go do the thing or buy the stuff or whatever was always just like me, right. my needs, yeah, can I not, what I want. And that has shifted so much just simply by going like, oh, what would my son think? Or how would I explain that to that's him right. if he ever asked me? So I always just try that. It's natural. I don't have to actively think about it. The first thing I default to is just like, you know, okay, if my son was there and I had to explain myself why I did that thing, whatever, like how would I communicate that to him? And if I find myself fumbling in my brain to
how do I defend this?
Yeah, defending it. It's just like, that's the answer is no, then it's mm-hmm. not good or it's not a good idea. And so I love that idea of looking through that lens, but just don't see us.
By the way, left turn. Do we have applicants? Have we started looking at the applicants for training positions here?
Every day we are.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still getting a ton. We're getting more.
Yeah. Bring them on though. I mean, Kyle and Katrina are consistently going through and taking interviews and we're looking at everybody.
It is. So if you work for Mind Pump, that means you're actually an employee of ours as a trainer or a coach. This is an incredible place to work because of our abundance of leads. So the business is just incredible. That being said, one of the hardest places to get hired to be a trainer coach, straight up. But if you think you have what it takes, go to Mind Pump Personal Training. What is it, Doug? MindPumpPersonalTraining.com/apply and see if you got what it takes. Everybody has to go through an internship process. I don't care how great you think you are. You're going to go through a period of being here for a little while for us to see if you're somebody that we would be happy representing Mind Pump. But if you think you got what it takes, you want to be a trainer here, go to mindpumppersonaltraining.com/apply. Seed is the world's best probiotic, hands down. If you want the benefits of a probiotic, better skin, better energy, of course, better digestion, go with Seed. Check them out. Go to seed.com/mindpump. Use the code 25mindpump. Get 25% off. Back to the show.
Our first question is from Shamunk7. How do I practice bracing for exercises like squats?
Do them. Okay. Yeah. So you know what's funny about this? This is one of those things. Well, I'll go over what you should focus on, but this is one of those things where if you focus too much on it, it becomes a problem sometimes.
Mm.
It's like think about blinking. Right now you're feeling weird every time you blink your eyes or whatever. It's like a natural thing. So bracing while you squat essentially just means you're just tightening up your core. Now, what does that look like? Well, pretend like someone's going to poke you in the ribs and you kind of brace up like someone's going to tickle you. That's what it's like. That being said, don't overthink it, because I've had people do this where they brace so hard the whole time they get fatigued by rep number 5. And I'm like, no. Like, you can breathe. Like, you could relax a little bit in between.
Yeah.
What you want to do is you want to brace when you're about to do the rep. So bars on your back, you're ready to go down, brace your core, go down to the squat, come up, take a couple deep breaths. Now you can relax your core. Before you take the next rep, brace and do it again. That's for the people who find themselves feeling like, I don't know what to do. What you don't do is you pull in your midsection. I've heard people say that. That's not how you brace. And then also wearing a weight belt changes this completely. When you wear a weight belt, bracing looks different. You're actually pushing out against the belt with your core to create stability, which is a very different bracing technique than doing it without a belt.
You want to imagine somebody about to punch you in the stomach.
Yep.
I mean, and be able to breathe throughout that process. It's as simple as that.
So that's how I used to coach to a client, and I would actually have them figure it out. Like, because the bracing part I don't find is the most difficult part. It's the breathing while also bracing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so the way you practice that is like, okay, so I'm bracing right now.
Yeah.
So you should still be able to have dialogue and conversation while also creating that brace. That's the way you practice that, because if you are bracing so hard, you're holding your breath and you're getting exhausted.
It's impeding on
that. It's not right. Like, I should be able to brace and stand here or sit here and talk to you normal and nobody else knows but me, I know that I'm bracing my core right now. If you can get to that place, that's what it looks like when you go into these movements like squatting and deadlifting, is you should be able to brace and still breathe.
Yeah, now here's what it looks like when, you know, if you want to get real technical, it's like before I do my rep, I take a deep breath in, brace, I go down. On the way up, I breathe out, but the breathing out sounds like or
I like
or
to, yeah,
it's coming out like an S, it's coming out with intention and with bracing. It's not this loose breath out.
Mm-hmm.
At the top of the rep, you can relax a little bit and catch your breath and then do it again. And if you're strong, this is how you're supposed to lift. If you're strong, you brace, you breathe in, you brace, go down, tighten things up, come up. As you're coming up, you breathe out with this kind of real controlled, forceful type breath. But most people, I think, relax around this. Focusing too much on breathing and bracing leads to some weird bracing and breathing.
It's weird and dysfunctional and you get lightheaded.
Yep.
Next question is from Chunky Beast. Can very dry skin and lips, despite constantly moisturizing, drinking 2 to 3 liters of water a day, and lowering weekly weight training volume, be a sign of overtraining?
It can, but it's more likely a sign of something else.
Yeah, dehydrated. Just imagine somebody's constantly doing that.
Tell you guys
stop
doing that.
Yeah, stop doing it. If you do that all the time, this is
a problem. I hate when I see dudes on like dating shows and they'll walk out and it's like doing, like, what are you, skiing? Like, what do you do with your hands?
Yeah.
Anyway, this could be a sign of a B vitamin deficiency or a nutrient deficiency.
Could be signs of dehydration too, right?
It can, but they're drinking, 2-3 liters
of water. Yeah, but what about with sodium? Like having
maybe your electrolyte balance.
Maybe bump your sodium a little bit, but look at your fatty acid profile. This will happen if your fat intake is too low.
Fat intake, yeah.
So if you're I've had female clients like this where they're afraid of eating over 40 grams of fat and they have skin issues.
Hmm.
I'd have them bump their fat intake and then lo and behold, their skin looked amazing. So look at fat intake, look at nutrient deficiencies. B vitamin deficiencies can cause chapping of the lips and the tongue, or like redness on the tongue. And then maybe you need a little bit of sodium in your water. But if you're constantly dry and skin and lips, it there's something missing.
Next question is from Rainbow Mom 3. For those on a GLP-1, is it more important to hit your protein target or strength train? In the event you're struggling to consistently hit protein but are consistent with strength training, ultimately, is that okay?
I like the caveat. Yeah. I like the caveat because here's a person that says that they constantly struggle with protein intake, but they never miss workouts.
Right, right. It's for sure protein.
Therefore, what's important for them?
Protein. 100%.
If it was the flip, I always miss my workouts. My protein's great all the time.
Yeah,
don't skip your workouts.
Right.
So this is an easy one. And this is a great illustration of the individual, value of these kinds of.
That's the focus right there.
Pieces of advice. If which one is the one that you miss the most? Well, that's probably the one that you need to be more.
Especially in the context of a GLP-1, because you know that they're eating low calorie.
Yeah.
So if you're really low calorie and you're low protein and you're training, like, You're gonna break down muscle. You're gonna lose muscle like that. And so hitting your protein intake is extremely important. And especially if you already say that you're really consistent with the workouts, it's like, yeah, you'd be better off missing that workout and hitting your protein intake than vice versa for this client.
That's right.
Next question is from Dad Fit Life. In today's world, it's easy for men to isolate themselves and sacrifice their hobbies and friendships for their family's well-being. How do you guys juggle responsibility as a father and husband while still keeping some friends and hobbies that you enjoy doing?
Here's what's interesting about
nothing's this. Balanced.
Yeah. And also things change. So the message that you can do it all, like you have kids, nothing changes.
Yeah.
The biggest lie.
That's horseshit.
That's crap. Your priorities change. And so things look different. I'll give you an example. If I'm an athlete, I'm a college athlete and I'm working out. The reason why I'm working out is for maximum athletic performance. So my workouts are for that. Later, if I'm 60 and I want good mobility and health, my workouts are for good mobility and health. Therefore, they look different. I can enjoy both of them. I just have to take it and use it in a way that's valuable. All right, where am I going with this? Your family's well-being, your children and your wife are more important than the hobbies that you do. That's true. But if you partaking in hobbies allows you to be a better husband and father, well, then go for it. So if you're never doing anything for yourself and it's just making you angry and bitter and resentful and tired and whatever, you're going to be beneficial to your family by taking some of that time off and doing things for yourself. And friends can help with this. Men need other men to tell them when they're shit. This is what one of the greatest values of having friends for guys is that your buddies that are close with you, they're the first ones that are look at you and go, bro, what are you doing? You're messing up. And you need that. If you don't have that, you don't have that.
You need to go fill your cup. You go fill your cup.
That's right.
I just think it's like what balance really is just shifting your priorities around constantly.
Yep.
And there's no way that you're going to nail it right at that moment in all aspects. So whatever, I always just look at it as like who needs me the most, you know, and like, or where do I need to be the most and where I see any kind of like deficits I need to address, whether it's in the family, whether it's in my, you know, extended family, you know, friends, or if I need some time to myself, like I have to kind of evaluate that constantly and then just shift my priorities around and accommodate appropriately. It's just, it's not something that like, I don't know anybody out there that's nailed it. So a lot of people out there say they have, and it's like, this is like one of these really annoying things for me to listen to, from people that think that like, oh, I'm so successful. You don't, unless you're constantly moving things around to make it work.
Well, I think you said that, cause I would say I've nailed this, but I also would say that you're right. It doesn't look like this perfect balance. Cause that's like, in other words, if I looked at it,
it doesn't look like single Adam.
It doesn't look, no,
that's
it doesn't.
What I mean.
It doesn't. So, but it doesn't look like to Justin's point, it doesn't look like a perfect 7 days of like on Monday, I hang out with the homies on Tuesday. Yeah. It's like, no, it's not
like a system.
What it looks like for me and why I feel that way that we've nailed this one. I think that the woman I married has everything to do with this. She values that as much and values that I have that as much and vice versa. Like, I always encourage her if time has gone by and she hasn't got away with the girls and done something, and same thing for her. She knows like, I love to just go off and go drive by myself. And like, and she will see sometimes when I'm buried into work and I'm out of balance because I'm so focused on the business right now. It's like, oh, I know my honey needs to go take a day off for himself. And she'll come tell me, she's like, hey, Friday, go take one of the cars, get out of here. We'll see you tomorrow. And it's like, I'll go do that. And we do that for each other. We're always kind of watching, you know, because we do friendships are extremely important to us. And I maintain quite a few really good relationships with my friends. So is my time with just my wife outside of with my child. And then of course I love being with my son and doing a lot of things. And so it never looks like a perfect balance to Justin's point. It never is. But what it looks like is sometimes you're running a lot in one direction, and a good partnership is helping you always kind of evaluate that. You need
somebody outside to really point that out.
Yeah. And so Katrina and I, we have rules in our relationship that, and one of the rules that we have is she has the autonomy at any time she feels that she will like block, she runs the calendar and she'll mark off a day and like, I got to show up for that, whatever that thing is. And sometimes it's a family trip where the three of us go and do something. Sometimes it's just her and I, because we need to get our alone time. And sometimes it's you need to get the fuck out of here and go. And so, but she has that control, and I trust her to kind of be feeling the family dynamic always to give me that feedback of I'm not getting enough of one of those things, because I can put my head down. It's a strength of mine. It's like I can focus on something, go like, okay, this is where I'm at. Now your greatest strength is your greatest weakness. So the weakness is that I can get so focused in that direction that I can lose sight of some of those other things. But having a partner who's always giving me those checks and balances and does that keeps what I consider balance, right? It makes me feel balanced about it, even though it's not real balance.
And there's seasons in life. I think too, changing your perspective helps you find joy in the season that you're in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they're all different. This happened the other night. Dude. The other night, my 4.5-year-old, you know, we were in bed and he's downstairs. He's got a little bit of a cold. And I'm upstairs. I'm like looking forward to some alone time with my wife. And, you know, I love, you know, being with her, just the two of us for, you know, whatever. And so we're up there and he's calling up and he's having trouble falling asleep. And so my wife wasn't feeling good. So I'm like, I'll go down. I'll hang out with him. So I go down and he's like, no, I want, I want mom. And I said, listen, I love hanging out with you, buddy, just me and you. And he goes, well, then let me have both of you. So I'm like, I can't say no to that, right?
Yeah.
So she comes down. Now, I could have been annoyed. I could have been annoyed. And maybe that would have happened to me at some points where I'm annoyed and say, oh God, now we're doing this instead of hanging out, just the two of us. But instead, you know, there's a shift and we're in bed and I'm he's hugging us and he's so happy that we're with him. And it's like, this is going to end. Like,
totally.
This is not going to happen.
Yeah.
He's not going to be 15 years old with us laying in bed with him cuddling. That's just not going to happen at that age. If he doesn't be weird, right?
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. So it's a season. And so what that did for me is I became joyful.
You appreciate it.
I became joyful.
You appreciate it. Because there's going to come a time 18 years from now when it's just the two of you. All you got is this two of you. And you don't have a kid interrupting. Yeah. So a lot of this is framing, right?
A lot of it's framing.
It's how you frame these situations that you're in. I do think, though, I do, to the person's point, men can get this way, though, where they stop. They
really get isolated.
They get really isolated. They lose their relationships with other men, and that is so important to do that.
It is.
Again, Katrina, we talked about this shit before we got together. Like, this was stuff that we knew where it was important to us. We both valued that, and so we've just never lost sight of that. Now there's seasons where you're more whatever because of whatever. It's just like having a newborn kid. Like your entire life is your newborn kid. And I have friends that when the kid comes, like you don't see him for a couple months. Yeah. It's like that's just part of
that's
it. Like
season.
And you know what they're doing. I don't hold it against my buddy because he's doing it because I've done it too. When that time is happening, then that goes and you free up and then you have more time to do stuff. And then eventually there'll come a time when they're all out of the house and all you got is time. And so I'm not upset that more of it's shifted. It, with them, but I do think it's important to. I think balance is such a terrible word that people throw around, but I do think all of it is important.
You know where men tend to screw this up is they tend to place too much value on work and less on everything else. So where men tend to isolate themselves here is they bury into work. That was me. That was my value. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna work like crazy, and then you lose sight of the other things that are very important. In my experience, that's what I've seen with men. I see less of the life.
It's either that, Sal, or like some guys, especially
I don't know. The hobby thing is real, dude.
So that's what I was going to say, Justin. Yeah. I see a lot of dudes that are fantasy football, hang out with their golf on their buddy on Saturday. They do all these things with the boys. I mean, I was that guy. I was that guy who every weekend my boys were at my house or I was at their house, and we were talking. I mean, we were like the bros. 100% was that guy.
Activities or therapy
for dudes. And so you know the video gaming is gone, the golf trips happen occasionally, but again, like trading that for what I am doing with my, like I'll take a all day long building Legos with my son over any video game binger with my buddies or something like that. So to me it's a easy sacrifice, or you know, but it doesn't mean I still don't maintain those relationships. It just looks different. It's different because I have different priorities in my life. And I don't know. I think there's a way to still do all of it. But a lot of guys have built these you know, routines around their hobbies, their life. And then they get married and have kids. And a lot of that goes because it's not realistic. It's just like, golf takes 10 hours, bro. Like you can't expect to golf every week anymore. Like, and some dudes do. I know guys that like,
well, your trading cards get dust.
Yeah. You know, but maybe that is the one thing that you do with your boys is always golf. But then the rest of the time is that. So there's ways to do both. It's just like trying to have your cake and eat it too all the time is, you know, a little ridiculous.
Yep. Look, if you like the show, come find us on Instagram. Justin is at Mind Pump Justin. I'm at Mind Pump DeStefano. Adam's at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.
You've got vast stockpiles of data, but 80% of it is unusable by AI. That's a lot of missed opportunity. The Highland Content Innovation Cloud is the only platform that makes enterprise content and unstructured data agentic AI ready, secure, and actionable, so you can make real impact for the people you serve. Incredible opportunity is here with Highland. Turn insights into impact.